A human bar graph is pretty breathtaking, isn't it? How many of you remember what happened in 1980? That change, that equity that was established and sustained between 1949 and 1979? Reagan. It's Ronald Reagan. The policies created by Ronald Reagan's administration changed a very foundational myth, that principle on which this nation was built. And it was that we take care of each other. Before 1980, the dominant values that communities of faith and neighborhoods held was that we take care of one another. We had a communal vision of our nation, of our cities, of our states. Ronald Reagan ushered in the cowboy, the rugged individualist, that self-sufficient model of pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and if you work hard enough, you can make it. You just have to work hard enough. So, anyone who doesn't work hard enough is poor. They're responsible for their poverty. Sharon is a real person. She's one of three women, married with children, who lives in the South Bronx. She shares a two-bedroom apartment with her husband and children. One family in each bedroom, one family in the living room. Sharon works full-time. Her husbands and each of the husbands work two jobs full-time, and they barely make minimum wage. So it takes them working three jobs to get one bedroom in a two-bedroom apartment. What is that about? What is that about? It's about policies. It's about values that we place on our legislators. It's what we require of them and what we vote them into office to create. So that rugged individualism has made people, all of us, struggle harder to achieve success. I grew up in a well-integrated neighborhood economically. There were doctors and lawyers, there were teachers, there were nurses, there were personal care attendants, and then there was my dad, who was a labor negotiator for the Machinists Union. My mom stayed at home. She did not work outside of the home. We had a summer cottage by the ocean. We had boats. We took skiing vacations on a very lower middle class, factory, minimum wage kind of income. That reality is non-existent. I mean, even people in the 5% have two people working. Who here can afford to have one person, maybe, working and a stay-at-home mom? That's a privileged place in our nation now, not the rule. And that's had all sorts of ramifications for our society, where schools now are expected to raise our children because people can't be at home with them, where many children don't go home after school. They wait there for their parents to pick them up. And then you get into the affordability of childcare. Who gets to afford childcare? Sister Simone met the real-life Sharon at an English as second language workshop, where she went, after she worked her full-time job, she picked her kids up, and then she went to a workshop to try and learn English so that perhaps she could get a better-paying job. Our poor are not lazy. They have a lead weight tied to their ankles, and it's policies. It's the myth of Horatio Alger. The recent tax cuts that, when fully implemented, will move Carla, the one who walked so far, in the 1%, she will go forward four more steps in the next 15 years, and probably less when that's fully implemented.
Jack, the 5% behind her, will move up 1.5 steps. And then Michael Ray, who's in the top 20, he'll go forward 1 inch. Zoe, in the middle class, goes back 2 inches. Shephra, who's the next to the bottom, she basically stays in place. And Sharon, on the bottom, because of all the social programs included in that bill that will be cut to pay for the tax increases or the tax savings, she will go back to the very starting place where she started in 1980. She goes back 2 steps. Make no mistake. The United States of America is not a secular society, as some people believe. We are very, very religious. And our religion, it's not Lutheran or Unitarian Universalist or Muslim. It's Western capitalism. And that's what we have. So where else but in the context of spirituality and in communities of faith can we make the changes necessary? Where else can we inspire the depth of moral courage it will take to reverse these policies? Wendell Berry asks us, what sort of economy can we create that will be responsible to the holiness of all life? People, planet, profit. We can coexist with all three, but there's a moral imperative for us to balance them with thoughtful consideration and community awareness, with a foundational understanding that we are our siblings' keepers. Can we demand reduction in consumption? Can we promote the development of renewable energy sources? Are we willing to pay the cost of resources and waste properly priced? What is the moral need that needs to be defined? The Poor People's Campaign. Poor People's March on Washington in 1968. Just before Martin Luther King was assassinated, he began to make the links between economic justice, racism, environmental degradation, and militarism. And he and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and Ralph Abernathy, in the wake of his assassination, tried to raise this nation's awareness of the intersectionality of planet, people, and profit. And the campaign demanded that economic and human rights for the poor Americans of diverse backgrounds needed to be addressed. They were motivated by a desire for economic justice, but they were also motivated because it brought people together from all walks of life. Bishop William Barber has taken up the torch. He started his work in North Carolina with Moral Mondays, taking people to the capital of North Carolina to demand voting rights. He realized that he could not do this without the help of the environmentalists, the labor negotiators, without economic justice people, without racial justice, and without people from all walks of life. So he started what he calls a moral revival, intersectionality, fusion politics, that asks each one of us, with our priorities, whether it's the planet, people, or profits, to come together at the places where policies are created, at state capitals and in Washington, D.C., to demand the moral courage of this country to take care of all people, planet, and profit. Together, creating that welcome table that will not only have enough food, it'll have enough chairs, and it will be diverse enough that everyone will find something there that represents their priorities, their culture. Halal, kosher, vegetarian, vegan, and everything else. That's a true, true welcoming table. So this People's Campaign is a multiracial, multicultural, multilingual, and multi-economic framework. It has African Americans, Asian Americans, Mexican Americans, Puerto Ricans, Native Americans, and white all together, marching. Marching for the poorest. They're coming out of the hills of Appalachia. They're coming out of the South Bronx. And the people who are the poorest will lead us. We will affirm their rights. We'll affirm their dignity and worth. The campaign really challenges the idea that economic rewards come to the hardworking individual. It recognizes that beginning in the 1970s, wages for the bottom 80% have remained largely stagnant, that we have 64 million people working full-time who live below the poverty line. Working full-time. On April 19th, I spent about 2 hours on a conference call with 120 other Unitarian Universalists, clergy, state action network leaders, congregational social justice staff, and other board and leadership people from churches. And we made a commitment that in 1 week, we're going to join about actually tens of thousands of people of faith and conscience who will be going to Washington, D.C., starting on May 14th. And we're asking all of you to sign up in some way to contribute time, money, to go to Olympia or to go to Washington, D.C., to stand up for policy changes that will serve all in our nation. Even if we start changing them now, it will take decades for us to be able to erase what has happened since 1980, but we have to start. The best time to plant a tree is 30 years ago. The next best time is today. So go on our website tomorrow, find the link to the UU People's Campaign, sign up, and just sign the pledge that you will be part of this moral revival. Follow William Barber. Follow Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. March in Washington. March in Olympia. March on your computer. Whatever you can do. This is a powerful, powerful moment and a mass mobilization that is going to take all of our attention to make it successful. I want to read to you the call from our UUA president, Susan Frederick Gray. For too many people, for too many families, the urgency of this moment is literally about life and death. Families are being broken up. Young students are being shot in our schools. Black people continue to be vulnerable to extrajudicial police killing. And a militant and unapologetic white supremacy movement is on the upsurge. Looming over it all is the lurch towards authoritarianism and the blatant corruption of our democracy, with the intentional, targeted redistribution of wealth from the lower and middle class to the most wealthy. We're asking you to reinvigorate your love of your neighbor, to resurrect the national focus on community. Join the People's March in thought, word, deed. Plan to get out the vote for our fall elections. Vaclav Havel said, "Hope is a state of mind, not of the world. Hope, in its deep and powerful sense, is not the same as joy, that things are going well, or a willingness to invest in enterprises that are obviously heading for success. Rather, it is the ability to work for something simply because it is the right thing to do." I invite you to allow your faith to inspire you to remember what the right thing to do is. And participate. Participate in some way. This is our moment. To be the keepers, to be the makers of change.